Biggest three. Okay, so I'm going to try to read it. I'm just, you know, mostly translating without. There is a bit more. I thought that was enough, but there is a bit more. Okay. And this is an igeres that he's writing to Reb Shmuel ibn Tibbon. Reb Shmuel ibn Tibbon was his translator. Shmuel ibn Tibbon was the one who translated the Rambam for him, the Mor Nevuchim. And Shmuel ibn Tibbon sent him a letter asking him for different things they didn't know clear. So the Rambam writes to him. First of all, he writes a introductory pasuk, Lefi sichlo yuhulal ish. A person is praised by his seichel. In other words, he really likes him. And he says, I received all your ksavim from you, my Talmud, who understands and knows my crown of my Talmud and the great Chacham Reb Shmuel Reb Yehuda. And he said, many years ago, I've heard the wonderful things about your father. And I knew about his amazing amount of Chachma, his precision of language in Hebrew, and Loshon Hagori, I'm not sure if that is the language of Spain, or I mean, I can't believe it's Hungary. So, because Hungary is called Hagari, but I don't think so. And then he's heard about from all sorts of people that came from Granada and told him about his knowledge. And then Reb Meir, who learned by Reb Avram in the Rivet, he says, Reb Avram, the Rav HaGadol Shebe Puskirs. So he mentions it, the Rivet, by name, which is fascinating. He says, you learned by Reb Yaakov and by Reb Ezra. He also told me about your father, what kind of wise man he is, and all of the Sfarim that he copied, translated, Dikduk and different chachmas, and I didn't know that he left over a son. And now he says, because being that your ksavim came to me in Hebrew and in Arabic, and I understood all the places that you had a problem in the Mor Nevuchim, so he's his translator, and he said, I'm not, you know, you have all these issues, I understand. The places that you felt were a mistake, then I agree with it. In other words, you know, you caught it correctly. And it says, Baruch Hashem, that your father, Reb Yehuda ibn Tibbon, has a son like you, Reb Shmuel. It's an amazing compliment. And not only are you a blessing to your father, you're a blessing to all wise people, and so on. Then he says, whatever you asked really well. The points that you raised are really good points. All the places where you thought that there's something missing, a word or a girsa, you hit the nail on the head. And I also have a list of all the Arabic terms, how I want them translated and what I want at the end. He says, you are certainly the appropriate person to translate because Hashem gave you a wise heart that understands metaphors. In other words, the biggest problem in language is when a word does not have an exact translation. To translate table to shulchan back and forth, it doesn't need more than Google. But when a person says, you know, he's zeicha to shulchan of gedula, it doesn't mean a table of greatness. And therefore, to understand how to translate a metaphor, you understand it. I saw from your words that you actually understood the depth of what I did and understood all of the secrets that I had secreted in it. I explained to you in Arabic how you should do all those translations and use your own seichel and so on. I want to tell you when I heard about you, I was very happy. But I was also astonished. I was happy that there is such a wise person. And I wondered, how is it that a wise person or somebody born between illiterate people have this trait, and to pursue wisdom and to know Arabic so well, which is similar. He says it's like Hebrew, but different, and how you understand all the various different Dictor Kaloshen and all the deep things. It must be that you come from, it must be a root from somewhere else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you a sight and so on and so forth. I'm not sure exactly where Ibn Tibbon was, that he felt that it's such a big chiddush, that he's so smart and so on. This is interesting. Then he says again, I got all the sum of yours. I saw where the mistakes are. The prokim that you don't understand certain things about the Seder, I'll explain to you everything. But he said, I want to give you one klal in translations. Anyone who wants to translate from one language to another language, and you're going to translate word for word, and you also try to keep the structure of what's being said, it's going to be very difficult, and it will be it'll be a very mistaken translation. The same way he says, like someone who translated Aristotle or Galen, one of the translations was somebody who attempted to translate it as literally as he could, and therefore what the result was an extremely inaccurate translation. It's not correct. A translator from language to language should try to understand what's being said, the content, and then you should take the same content and say it in your language the way a local speaker would understand it. In other words, a good translator does not translate literally, but he understands what's being said, and then he re-says it in that language. And therefore, you're going to have to somehow, you're going to have to reverse the order sometimes. You'll sometimes have to use a few words for one word, and sometimes one word will be able to contain many words, and there'll be words missing, words extra, in order that you give over the same understanding that you gave in the original language. So the point of translation is not to translate words, it's to translate meaning. And the question is, when the person finishes reading whatever it is that they translated, does he have the same sense of things as the person reading the original or not? That's the ikar. And then he brings good translations of Galen's books and good translations of Aristotle's book. That these people, what they did was, they did not translate words, they translated the ideas, the concepts. And that's what, those are the only worthy books reading to use. Okay. Then he goes through, we're not going to go through, he goes through many, many, he has, let me see how many places he has. Aleph, 31 places, and then he has another 14 words that he translates for him, that he helps him with it. Then he says, you should also understand, this is, he says, what I thought of now as I'm writing it, you should understand also, he says, it's different, somebody who answers right away, than somebody who thinks about it, how to say it. So he says, so translation is really, it's a composition. It's not a translation. And therefore, if you will, when you redo it now, you will find words that give you a better sense of it. Don't hesitate to use them. The main thing is you must understand what's being said, and then you are going to put it in the words that best convey that meaning. Okay, then he goes through a few more details, which again we'll skip, about all sorts of translations and so on, you know, different nusachs and so on. I'm going to go. Okay, towards the end of the letter, he says, the Ribbono Shel Olam knows how I was able to write you this letter, because I ran away from people, secluded myself someplace where nobody's going to be able to find me, and sometimes I stand on the wall and hold on as I'm writing, and sometimes I'm laying down because I'm so weak, because I'm extremely weak physically, getting very close to old age. Mind you, he died, I think he must have been around 70, the Rambam, that age. Now, what you told me that you would like to come to me, says, you know, you're very welcome, and I'd be very happy, and I certainly would look forward to it, and I would be happier seeing you than you would be happy seeing me. And even though it would be very hard to go, you know, to travel in the ocean, it's dangerous, but I want to tell you something. Don't do it, because you're not going to get anything out of this except for meeting me. And maybe some covet if you'd like. But wisdom, or to spend even an hour with me in the day or at night, don't even hope for it, because I'll tell you what my problem is. He said, I live in Mitzrayim. The king is in Cairo. And between these, it's about two Tchumei Shabbos between the two places. So I guess Mitzrayim is not all of Egypt as much as it's a neighborhood or whatever. And I have a very heavy burden towards the king every day. I must see the king every day in the morning. I guess the king was a bit hypochondriac of some sort, or he had very good insurance that covered a daily visit. I'm not sure about a dentist, Alex. I don't know if he saw the dentist every morning. Maybe like he maybe put all his dentists to death so he wouldn't have to see the... But when he's weak, or one of his sons or one of his wives doesn't feel well, I can't leave Cairo, and I spend most of the day in the king's house. And then there's always going to be a minister and some sort of government employee, and I have to treat them. Klal is every day I go to Cairo in the morning, and when there's nothing wrong, I come back after half a day. I come back, I'm stopped, and I find my hallways full of goyim, some chashev, some not chashev, judges, policemen, a whole multitude of people who know when I come back. I get off my animal, I wash my hands, so I guess washing hands was already common. I go out and I ask them to please excuse me till I eat something. And not even a meal, just a chil zaroi. Then I go out and I heal them and I write prescriptions, and they keep going in and out till at night, and sometimes till 2 hours into the night. And I will tell them what to do even if I'm laying down because I'm drained. And as night falls, I am out, the shmata. I can't even talk. At the end of the bottom line, no Jew can talk to me or seek my company except for Shabbos. Then after davening, it will come. I tell them, you know, all the issues for the coming week, what they're supposed to do. They learn until noon, and everyone goes their own ways. And some of them come back to learn again in the afternoon. This is my daily schedule. And this is only part of what you'll see if you come. So he says, when you finish my pirush, because once you start a mitzvah, you have to finish it, you can come for a visit, but you're not going to get any to'elas because my time is extremely, my time is very, very limited. So that is as far as visiting him. Now he gives us some instructions about what he should study. He says, don't read Aristotle, but rather read Aristotle with commentaries. He says Alexander and Timastius, or Ibn Rashad. The other Sfarim, the Sefer Tapuach and Sefer Beis Azov, that are also commentaries on Aristotle, they're nonsense. There's nothing that's garbage. He says those are two works that are attributed to Aristotle. They absolutely are not. The Chochmas Alokis of Al-Razi is his, but it's Al-Razi's, it's worthless because Al-Razi was a doctor. He had no idea about theology. The book, the Sefer Gvulam and Sefer Yesodos that Yitzhak Yisraeli wrote, nonsense, full of it's he was a doctor and he was out of his expertise when he wrote those books. The Olam Cotton that Rav Yosef Atzadik wrote, I didn't see the book, but I know the person. I think the person has a lot to him, and probably there's something worth seeing in the Sefer. As a clown, I'm telling you, don't study logic except for what Abu Netzar Faribi came up with, and especially, certainly, the book of beginnings. Everything is really, really perfect, and a person can understand it because he was so bright. So his work is both 100% reliable and quite lucid, and it's worth your while to learn it. Also, Abu Bakr ibn Altsig was a big philosopher, and everything he wrote is yosher, and for people to understand, it's very good. Aristotle are really the seid and the ikar of all these chachmas, but they can only be understood with their commentaries, like I said before, Alexander or Timastius or Ibn Rashad. The other stuff, Sifrei Banduklis, who's that? Henocles, not sure. Pythagoras, he's talking about Pythagoras' philosophical works, Hermes, for Pyrrhus, these are ancient philosophy, old philosophy. It's a waste of time to study them. Plato, who's the Rebbe of Aristotle, his works and his books are deep. And they give a lot to a person because Aristotle, but it was basically saying like this, there's a lot of depth to Plato, but Aristotle started where he finished and built on top of him. So he says, what Aristotle says is the bottom line of what a person could know, except for people who have nevuah. In other words, using your mind if a person wants to use his mind to understand, Aristotle is the furthest a human being can understand. Anything else is only through nevuah. Abyssinia's work, even though it's very good, they don't have that same dagger, but they're okay books. And he's also a person who's worthy of studying his stuff. I hope that I've set you straight what to study, what to put effort in, and so on and so forth. And so on and so forth. That's the Rambam's letter to Ibn Tibbon. There are quite a few interesting points over here, but first of all, it goes back to when people speak about the Rambam being a doctor and a Talmud Chacham and so on. Very clear, had the Rambam been a practicing doctor all his life, we would not have had a Mishnah Torah, wouldn't have had any of his Sfarim. There's no way the Rambam could write his Sfarim while he was a doctor. So he became a doctor later, or a practicing doctor. He was supported by his brother when he wrote Mishnah Torah. For 10 years, his brother supported him, and that's how he wrote Mishnah Torah. And once he became a doctor, he was overwhelmed. And also have a real sense of the Rambam's, he didn't just study. He had very clear and sharp sense of what it is. He had studied it, which renditions of Aristotle are good, which are bad, which are worthless, and so on and so forth. And it's just a fascinating letter.
Do you think, is the Rambam's work, his schedule, do you think it's based upon like a general work ethic, or is that like the emes that a person should just put everything into it? When they're a doctor, they should put everything into it? Or because it's a Shem?
I think he didn't have a choice. Basically, when your custom is the king, then I think your choices are limited. And that's why I think he stresses it. He says, you know, basically the king has me come and serve his entire family and all the ministers. He couldn't turn people away. I don't think he would have done it l'chatchila that way.
When he came back home, he had all those people waiting for him, and he would treat them all into the night.
Right. He couldn't turn them away.
I have a riot because it's only goyim. Right. Why didn't he help Jews if he was about helping?
Maybe the Jews, he gave them answers how not to get sick in the first place. He says that on Shabbos he has talked to the Jews, and I don't know. You know, the
looks like he didn't have a choice. The guy, like, he couldn't turn away the
right, car. Right. He didn't have a choice, and that's that. You know, it's but that's so interesting. Okay, the next one here is a letter to the Anshe Luniel again. It's a smaller letter. And we still have time, we can do that. So he says like this. Again, he liked the Anshe Luniel. He felt, I mean, they held of him. He held them to be big time and chachamim and so on. Now he says, some very nice titles. He says, I received your letters, and the people I mentioned are, and people that I mentioned are on the letter. I gave everybody a bracha, b'klal, b'frat, and from your words we can tell how much cheshek you have to learn and the fact that you pursue wisdom and so on. Don't be upset that my answer came so late. He said, I already told Rabbi Yonason Luniel, which is we saw before, I answered his fakis, and I sent you with the letter together the third chelik of Mor Nevuchim in Arabic. When you asked me to write it in Hebrew, he says, I wish I would have had the time to do that, both this Sefer and other Sfarim that I wrote in Arabic, which I wish I, you know, which I was, because I was in Arab-speaking countries, that's where I lived, and at least I was able to, you know, I was able to give them some Torah in that. See, he says, but Lemaisi said, my time constraints, the burdens of time have encompassed me, and even the pirushim that I made, and some of inyanim that I wrote in says lishon rabbanishin adayin afelos. So it works that have not been corrected yet. I don't have any time to correct them to magiyat for publication, certainly translation. I swear to you, I don't even have a minute's time to write something small, not in the day, not at night. And it's just mekvoidchem, I was mitzayim myself to write something, b'ksav yodi. But our kaponim says, you have a tremendous chacham ulis by you. That's Rav Shmuel ibn Tibbon, who's very wise, and going back in, and as a de'an achayna, loshen limudim, and he can translate whatever you want. I rely on his translation. So this is a pretty good haskama on the translation. Now he says, my worthy nobles, I want to tell you that there are almost nobody left today that learned Be'iyun, the words of Avinu Avashi, you and all the cities around you, Provence, because I know you sit and learn always, you're people of wisdom, and because in many places Torah has been lost, most big Medinas have died from Torah, the other ones are just falling apart, and some of them are sick. In Eretz Yisrael and in Syria, which is, there's one place in Aram Tzova, which is Halab, that has a little bit Chachamim that Osik Torah, but they don't, they're not meimisatzim ba'oihel. In other words, they're not full-time learning. And in all of the Goyla and in Shinar, there are two or three places in all of Taman and the Arab cities. Everybody learns a little bit, but they don't really understand it. It just gets hard for learning. He says the but some of the wealthy people have gotten together and they bought three sets of the Rambam, and they wrote to people and they've enlightened them, you know, to, now they know what to do. Up until India. But in India, the Jews in India, they don't know the Torah Shebichtav, they don't know the Bible. All they have of the religion is that they, on Shabbos, they keep Shabbos and they do a bris milah. But they know nothing more of the religion in India. In the cities that are not doing well in the Muslim lands, they read the Torah as it says, and that's how they keep it. Basically, they just take a chumash, they pass on the chumash. In the Maghreb, in Western Africa, there's a gzeir on them. The Muslims really bore down. They couldn't keep the Torah. So all that's left is you, my brothers, be strengthened. Vishtadl, Yoischem, Ishem, Nechayel, try to be strong people. And everything is told on you. Either be miyavim or be cholitz. He's playing on the words as well. Don't depend on me to lead this battle. I no longer can go out or in. He's recording Moshe Rabbeinu, and I become old, not because of actual age, just my body has become worn out, and my body is ill. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help that through you, Torah will spread and so on. Kind of very, very, what's the right word for it? The morose Rambam, but I guess that was the, that was the case. Okay, next week, I know we should not be able to learn. In 2 weeks, also not. Now, I'll be spending most of the summer in Eretz Yisrael. So, I mean, come out the whole summer. So this time, we'll probably hold it here till Elul sometime. Okay.
Have a good summer.
Yeah, take care.
Hello. Take care, bye.
Bye.
Yeah.